10/27/1985, and we've been going straight through Pirkei Avos. But now we're going to be skipping the in the third parak. We're going to be skipping the first two Mishnayos because in years past, Rabbi Chait learned Pirkei Avos on a Shabbos and he recorded on a Sunday. So those two Mishnayos, you have to refer back to Kisvei Chachamim 1. So refer back to Kisvei.
We're to the third parak, but it just so happens that we did the first two Mishnayos in the third parak already, and it's on tape also. So we're just going to start from the third one. Okay, Gimel. Third parak, third Mishnah. Alright? You have to remember that Pirkei Avos, the nature of the study of Pirkei Avos, is really not purely philosophical. It's philosophy, but it's really the application of philosophical principles, more than just the philosophical principles themselves. Apparently Chazal held that it's not enough to just know the abstract philosophical principles. But in order for a person to perfect himself, you have to be able to see the main applications, the essential applications of the philosophical ideas. And that's really what the nature of the study of Pirkei Avos is. So now we're up to this third Mishnah. Let's keep it in mind while we learn this Mishnah. Alright? Reb Shimon Omer. Shlosha she'ochlu al shulchan echad. Three people that ate together at one table, v'lo amru al of divrei Torah, and they didn't speak among themselves divrei Torah. Ki'ilu ochlu mizitchem mason. It's just as if they ate from the sacrifices of Avodah Zarah, Zivchei Mason, because the Zivchei means the sacrifices, and Mason refers to the Avodah Zarah. Okay. Shenema, Kikol Shulchanos Molu Ki Tzoa, Bli Mako. That's a Pasuk in Yeshaya.
Let me have eight.
Ki Tzoa is that which is disgusting to people. It's an interesting thing, but the Avodah Zarah is always referred to as being disgusting. Toeva. It is a psychological disgust, and there's a philosophical disgust. And the reason why Avodah Zarah is disgusting is not because you find it psychologically repugnant, but it's a philosophical repugnance. Okay? So the word Toeva in the Torah is not that which is repulsive naturally to a person. Not something which a person finds repulsive naturally. It's something which is philosophically repulsive. It's a different kind of a different concept. Something that's repulsive philosophically means that it is so far away from the world of reality that a person who is in tune with the world of reality finds it abominable. That's when the Torah used the word Toeva. The word Toeva is not used by the Torah as being something which is psychologically repulsive. Because you can't explain the issue of the Torah based upon the fact that if somebody thinks it's repulsive, that's psychological repulsive. But we are concerned with philosophical repulsive. You have to be tuned in a certain amount. A person has to be in a certain level to be able to sense a philosophically repulsive, or something that's philosophically repulsive. You have to be on a certain level to be able to sense it. Not everybody could sense what that is. And you have to, if your person is not on a level, I mean, it doesn't, the emotion doesn't relate to it. But if a person is on such a level, the emotion will relate to that which is philosophically corrupt, and they'll find it repulsive. Okay? And the biggest proof that it is that the Torah is not discussing psychological repulsion is from Avodah Zarah. There's nothing psychologically repulsive about Avodah Zarah. What's repulsive about it? I mean, you can see eating shkatzim or musim, a person could say is repulsive, or a person could say that homosexuality is repulsive, but they can't. But if the Torah is the same term, it's not obviously. It's not because of the psychological revulsion that a person experiences. Is a philosophical revulsion that the Torah is talking about. And you have to be on a certain level to be able to experience whether actually when a person is on a higher level, the emotions relate to a different type of situation. Like, for instance, shame. Shame is really something which a person experiences when he does something that his fellow man condemns. That's the ordinary, that's psychological shame. But there's a philosophical shame. Philosophical shame is like when a person says in tshuva, in part of the tshuva, it says, boshti b'masai. Boshti, boshnu v'nachlamnu, mahorim elakai ponenu elecha, possible, I'm not quite exactly. But that's the Navi said. So there's a psychological type of shame, you see, which is on a lower level. But then there's a philosophical shame. Philosophical shame is when a person recognizes how far away from reality he is. He senses a certain type of a shame. The shame is before God, before the source of reality. It's a different kind of thing. The emotion becomes related to the philosophical. That is a higher level. That's a higher level. Okay? In the higher level, really, it's not that the person loses emotion. It's that the emotions become related to a different type of reality. One shot in Rashi is... You can help us first. All right. What's the other word? Rashi says, B'li Makam means ain't adasa of lasa. Means just intolerable. The plain shot in the pasuk is more like the Mitzvah says. B'li Makam means there is no empty space where there is no... where there is no key and so on. All right? So that's the mimer of... that's the pasuk. Now, what we have to understand in this memory, in the statement of the Chazal, is why is it such an intolerable thing that three people get together and they ate and they didn't speak Divrei Torah? I mean, what is it? Why do Chazal find it such an abomination? And what does that do with Avodah Zarah? These people got together, they ate lunch, and they didn't speak Divrei Torah. What's so terrible? What's so horrible about that? Okay? But Chazal sensed in that situation something very, very serious. And why three? Why three? Why not two? And why not one? What about one? If first he sat down to eat. If you're going to say that what Chazal is saying is that people that partake of physical enjoyment, they sat down to a lavish meal, and they ate, and they drank, and they didn't study Torah, so one person is the same thing, really. I mean, he's totally involved in the physical. He's completely involved in his own personal enjoyment, and he has nothing to do with the Torah. So it should be just as intolerable a situation. Why three? And certainly why not two? Okay? There's an interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says, V'lo amr lov divrei Torah. So Rashi says, U'regilin b'nei Adam liftor atzman b'brichas amazon. Rashi says, people usually are accustomed to satisfy this requirement with birchas hamazon. I don't know what is it? Yeah, it sounds like Rashi's trying to say that the birchas hamazon is enough. Where's he coming with that? No, it's not limitara. He means that. That there is a, he's being malamed tzvus, that there is some merit to it. The fact that they pat themselves with berachas and mazon. It's what? Yeah. When he says regil began lift out and berachas and mazon, so apparently he's saying that people are aware of the statement of the Chazal, and that what they do is they use berachas and mazon to pat themselves with this. It seems to be he seems to be mitigating the circumstance. Or at least to be malamed tzvus to say that there's some merit in doing this. Yes. Liftor has a negative implication, implying that they didn't really fulfill the full requirement. But he's not condemning them also. He's saying that they're not really considered seriously involved in Avodah Zarah. So it seems to be both ways. It's negative, yet it's a limud tzvus. They're not doing completely what they should, but they're not doing completely what they shouldn't either. Rabbeinu Yonah says, "She'ochlin v'shosin v'nenim u'zechiras haTorah lo tala al levavam, oy lohem, oy lohem, oy lohanasa. Woe unto them and woe unto their enjoyment." But it still doesn't explain if the case is because the Ochel and the Shos and the Nenin, so one person could be Ochel, the Shos and the Nenin very well also. Certainly too. Okay. Yeah. Well, that, exactly. You're crystallizing the question. The question is really, it's a philosophical problem of type. The person's a hedonist. It's a hedonistic involvement. But where does it come to Avodah Zarah? The second part of the statement of the Mishnah is, Avol Shlosha She'ochlu, but three people that ate on one table, and they did recite, they did say Divrei Torah, did converse in Divrei Torah. Ki'ilu achlu mishulchan ha'shel makom. It's as if they ate from the table of God. She'nema, v'yedaber elai zeh ha'shulchan ha'shelofnei Hashem. Okay? It's not necessary, it's not opposite. You could say that if a first three people ate together and they recited Divrei Torah, then it wasn't the Mizif Chemesim, but you ate from the Shulchan of God. That's already a high level. Ate from the Shulchan of God.
What does that mean?
It wasn't eat from the Shulchan of God. Every type is not of Azar. You can't just throw Azar around. Yeah. You know, every type is not of Azar. It's type of person of all types. He's a little Azar.
No, but this
you do not condemn a man more than he deserves. If we condemn him, we condemn him precisely. That's the way. That's the way to do it. You don't just want to heap condemnation on the man. Didn't have error. Fine. Define what the error is, isn't it? The question we have to understand is really what is avodah zarah. I would not say the Mishnah means by the three people eating that they just got together and they ate a kazayas. I don't think that's the case in the Mishnah. I think the case in the Mishnah when three people ate is that they got together to a big sumptuous meal. That's the implication. That's the implication of Mishnah. But I would say by the same token that if the two or the one got together for that same sumptuous meal, that it would not be a Avodah Zarah. That's the deduction of tonight. Yes. But we have to analyze. See, Chazal here sent something very deep in human nature. You have to really understand what Avodah Zarah represents and what God, the world of God, represents. And we spoke about this really philosophically at length in one of the shiurim, but as I said, this is an application of the philosophical principle. That's the nature of Tzedekah. So the philosophical principle we spoke about was that man finds himself in two worlds. He finds himself in the world of psychological reality, and then there's another world that he enters with his mind, in which he is completely apart from the world of psychological reality. He's in the world of God's reality. A person is studying the universe and is involved in thoughts concerning the universe, of a person is involved in the Chachma Satari, studying a Sugya and Bava Metzia. That moment that he's involved in the thoughts and understanding the Svaras and understanding the ideas, he's outside the world of psychological reality. He's in the world of absolute reality. And man really is basically a psychological being, strongly rooted psychologically. As a matter of fact, I think, maybe one time I'll get a share, but I think that the essence of Koheles really is a definition and a description of how man precisely relates to these two worlds, in what way? It's an interesting phenomenon. There's a one time mentioned there's a Rama. The question is, can a man essentially relate to the world of the absolute, or is it only accidental? But regardless of that, putting that question aside, the fact is that the human mind transcends the world of the psychological, and it goes into a new world. It uncovers a new world of an absolute reality. It can study the atom. It has nothing to do with his psychological makeup. He can uncover the sources of reality in the universe. So man is capable of getting into the world of absolute reality. Okay? But simultaneously, he's deeply rooted in the world of the psychological. Emotionally, he's very deeply rooted in the world of the psychological. That's why when Chazal say that a person is a very high, very, very high level, they say he's not a Yilud Isha. Not a Yilud Isha. Lav Bar Nash, I think, is a language. He's a person at a very high level. What does it mean? It means to say that he's completely apart from the world of psychological reality. That's what it means. Now, in the world of a psychological reality, there's a very, very powerful emotion. And that powerful emotion has as its ultimate objective avodah zarah. That's its ultimate gross expression. Now, what really is the world of avodah zarah? The world of avodah zarah is essentially, I mean, there's a lot of ramifications. I'm not going to go into the entire psychology of it, but you see, if you take a look at the primitive man, the way he worships avodah zarah, the big motivation behind the avodah zarah is, let's refer to it superficially, as a need for security. Certain need for security. Man is afraid that he's going to be destroyed. He has a mind, and the absolute part of his mind recognizes he could be destroyed. An animal doesn't have that recognition. He can't recognize that fact apart from himself. An animal just works by his instinct. It could sense a danger at the time, but it can't reflect on the fact that it's mortal. Whereas man, since he has a part of his nature which is removed from the psychological and which recognizes it as absolute, so he recognizes that he is mortal. Now, the thought is very frightening. He also has recollections of incidents in which people were killed. So he has to protect himself from that eventuality. Avodah Zarah is motivated, essentially, is motivated by fear, by fear. And the person really tries to remove himself from the dangerous situation that he recognizes. He senses that he senses his vulnerability. That's really what moves a man towards avodah zarah. The recognition of his own vulnerability. Man is very vulnerable. A person suddenly one day goes to the doctor and finds out he has a fatal illness. If it happens to him, I mean, he's very shook up. If it happens to the neighbor, notices this, he sees that he senses himself, his own vulnerability. It can happen. So man really can recognize a point, even though his emotions and his instincts don't want to recognize such a reality, but the fact is he is very vulnerable, and emotionally he feels the impact which results from this recognition. How does the person remove himself from this from this danger? How does the person remove himself from this danger? So the person tries to go back or to recreate situations in his early life where he felt the security and the safety. Usually, it goes back to situations of childhood where he felt the security of his parents. And the avodah zarah really is an attempt to recreate those feelings of emotional security. The oved avodah zarah has that emotional security from the idols and the whole elaborate system which he creates. The system really, if you study it and you analyze what he has done, you'll see that it goes back. These are representations from early life in which he had a certain security. The Navi mentions it, the Navi of Ayikra. And then the Haftarah of Ayikra. He says that he makes it big, the person makes a pesel, makes an image, and behind that image is a man. He's looking for the security of people, personal security. In his early youth, he had such a situation. Now he recognizes he's vulnerable and returns back to the early stage to try to find the security. But where does man find the security? Emotionally, psychologically. He finds it in the relationship to man himself. In primitive avodah zarah, he sets up elaborate systems. But a more sophisticated, a more modern person finds that same security in man. And that's why you have so many psukim in the Torah, al tiftachu v'mdivim, what's the pasuk you say every day in the halukas? The Ven Adam, what? Where's the part beginning of it? Okay, I'll just go to the Ven Adam Shem HaSashua. Right, the Ven Adam Shem HaSashua. And all, many, many psukim, Asher Adam, Shesoma, Shem Miftacho, and Or Adam, Sheyosim Adam Miftacho. You see? And really the essence of tefillah, what's the essence of tefillah, which we mentioned many times? The essence of tefillah is a removal from the state. And that's why in tefillah, the worst issur a person can do, the Gemara says, a person gets up in the morning and he goes, to his neighbor's house. He calls up his neighbor on the phone before he davened. Why? Chiglu lochem min ha'adam. Stop. Do not operate from, remove, cease your relationship to man. Ki bamehu nechshav. Because what is it? He's nothing. And the Gemara says, "Tikri bameh, ela bama." What is bama? Bama is avodah zarah. That's what bama is. So you see that the Torah, from these psukim, becomes clear that man, in order to find his security, where does he go? Where does the psychological impulse lead him? To people, other people. People make him secure. People make him secure, and that's why people are so gregarious by nature. And they're looking for the emotional security. They think about the socialization. The socialization doesn't serve just a functional purpose, but the socializing gives the person a feeling of security. Man gives the person gives the person a feeling of security. I can't say definitely, but I think psychologically wise, because it goes back to the early state of childhood, in which his security was the parents. And therefore, what he's trying to do is to recreate that same situation of security. So therefore, he feels very secure. People, society, on the whole, become like the parents, and the person's unconscious. I mean, psychologists talk about this. I'm not really interested that much in the psychoanalytical aspect, but I think it is true. That's why, when does a person feel the greatest? The greatest feeling a person can have is if he has the praise of the multitude. Why do people run for office, and why does the person want to become president of the United States, and why? Because of the great feeling that he gets from it. What is the great feeling? A whole country recognizes me. It's the height of, it's not just Gaiva. I'm not a Gaiva. It's a matter of the person feels important, security. Everything he's doing in his life is proper. What makes him feel so great? Man. That's ki bamel nechshav al tikri bamel elabama. That's the psychological reality. Now, part of this psychological situation of reality is not just to get together. There's different levels of getting together. When you get together, eating together is a very big source of identification. The Torah says that, what does the Pasuk say? V'kora l'cho v'chalta mizivcho. The first thing that will happen is you'll join in eating the sacrifices of the other nations. What is the eating? The eating is that's the man is looking for that, the identification. That's why and the whole intermarriage, whole thing, plus his identification. What does that need for the identification? The need is looking for that source of security. A person to be alone and not to be able to share, and you'll notice people object. They take offense. You see with kashrus, people take offense. You can't eat in my house? What is that? It's nothing against you. It's nothing personal. It's a matter of I keep a certain system. You don't keep the system. I'm not condemning you, but I just can't eat here. It's a matter of we're very friendly, but I just can't. No, you can't eat here. It's a personal offense. You can't eat here means you can't identify with me. You can't put, there's a lack of, there's a breach in identification. That's why people in business, they do business deals, they have a drink, they eat together. This is an important source of identification. Yadis, of course, went all out to break the identification. The laws of kashrus break the identification. These are the stam yenum, the chachomim, aser, not to drink together with goyim. Even the Rambam holds, actually, you can't even have a drink of nard wine, a scotch in a bar, not the Rambam being aser. Because it's, according to the Rambam, the halacha is not just yayin, but it's halacha of identification with the goy. You see, so Yadis recognized that this is a very, very powerful, very, very powerful emotion, eating together. There's no question about it. Behind the images, behind the photos, men. The reason the big power of Christianity, and that's the powerful attraction of Christianity. Powerful attraction of Christianity is because there's a man. So there's a man there. There's a person there. That's the power of the attraction. That's the same attraction of Avodah Zarah. There's no difference. It's modern Avodah Zarah and ancient. The modern Avodah Zarah Christianity is really not too far removed from the primitive. Okay. Now, of course, Yadis preached a totally different picture. Yadis wasn't satisfied with allowing man to remain on that level. For Yadis, remaining on that level is evil. There's one thing, like yesterday, the whole parsha of Avraham Avinu. What really did Avraham Avinu teach the world? What did Avraham Avinu teach the world? Avodah Zarah, removed Avodah Zarah, breaking the idols. But what Avraham Avinu taught the world is a new idea that the world cannot accept. Even today, it cannot accept. And the idea is, like the Rambam explains, the Rambam says, what about people that think that God has emotions, or that think that God has attributes, really actually has attributes? So the Rambam says, anyone that thinks that way, he says, is equal to or even worse than certain of others, or more sophisticated than he is. But the Rambam says, and if you'll say it's not the person's fault, because he was raised to believe that way, so he says the Ovdei Avodah Zarah had the exact same excuse, because they also were raised by their parents to believe in the Avodah Zarah. So what did Avraham Avinu teach the world? Avraham Avinu taught the world a new idea, and that is that in ignorance there is evil. Ignorance is synonymous with evil. No one ever taught such an effort, and no one today really believes such an effort, because people today, if a person's a nice guy, that's it. Their idea of evil and not evil is nice guy and not nice guy. First of all, it's not true even on a psychological point. But what Avraham Avinu taught the world, and what Yadus maintains, is that evil is to be found in ignorance. And that's evil. And it's to be despised just as much as a person who is mean and vicious. Same thing, a mean and vicious person is evil, and a person who is ignorant under the false ideas is evil. That's why the Rambam says in the Quran, anyone that does not accept and does not have knowledge of the 13 Ikarim of our faith, of Yadus, and does not accept them, he says, is mitzvah la'abdo l'son. Mitzvah to destroy him and to hate him. A mitzvah to hate him. Why? What are he doing? He doesn't know Hashem Echad. He thinks God is physical, or he doesn't know Hashem Echad. He doesn't believe in God. He's not the Keres, or whatever. What is evil about this man? Evil in Yadus is ignorance. Man does not have knowledge of certain realities, he's evil. That's really what I'm going to say. So, getting back to the Mishnah, what happens is there's a different psychological frame, really. Insofar as a person's tendencies towards security, there's a different psychological frame between one individual and a group. A group takes on a special importance psychologically. That's why people like to get together in groups. Like, for instance, the question is whether you're allowed to have a Thanksgiving party. Are you allowed to have a Thanksgiving party? So the question is it Avodah Zarah? Alright, so from a halachic standpoint, there really isn't Avodah Zarah, because it's not done anymore as a, I don't know if it was one time done, but definitely it's not done today. People don't do it because of any type of religious, it's not essentially related to any religious activity. But what it is simply it's a day off in which people want to get together and they want to eat. Okay? So I say it's not Avodah Zarah from the standpoint of halacha, because it's mice Avodah Zarah. Because it's something which people who don't even believe in religion do. It's a day in which it's a national holiday. But it is Avodah Zarah, because the idea of people getting together in a group to eat and to feast, that's a chenesed. Thanksgiving dinner is Avodah Zarah. It's Avodah Zarah from this mission. Okay? Yeah. People get together for the purpose of eating and drinking, that is Avodah Zarah. Because why do they want to get together? And they want to get together in a group. They don't want to get together with one other person. You'll notice that. It's a psychological phenomenon. Three is considered a group. Even the world says it. Two is company, three is a crowd. It's a crowd. Three is a different psychological reality. It's true also halachically. You see, Rabbeinu Yonah says. Rabbeinu Yonah says that... He says, "Lefishelo amol of the kishivas shlosha anoshim." He says, "Nikras chabura." Consider chabura, three people. Shehem mezamnim bebirchas hamazon. Ve'ein leschaber lehem. Ve'ein divretar beinehem. So three is a different reality. Three is a reality. Why a person, when a person is looking for security, is not just looking for one other human being. not looking for one other lonely human being. What he wants is, he wants three already, you see. There's, that's it. There's the group. And it's a different entity. So that's why the Mishnah says that three people that get together to eat and to drink, that's the height of the height of relationship. That's where the psychological need is satisfied on its highest level. And if there is no Divrei Torah, so then it's just an emotional experience, a relationship to man itself. It becomes just a situation where there's just an emotional expression of the enjoyment of being in the company of man and satisfying one's emotional needs with man, towards man, from man. And anyone that does that is equivalent to an Oved Avodah Zarah, because that's what he's doing. He's satisfying the needs, the underlying human needs to feel secure and to have psychological satisfaction. That's why it's considered Avodah Zarah. That's what the mission is. The strength and unity. The security of man. It's the security of man. That's the height of the situation. Socializing removes a person from his lonely state. Makes him feel happy. Makes him feel secure. He has other people with him. Friends. People around him. You see? That's the... See, it doesn't find its total fulfillment unless you have the eating situation. The eating is the identification. The eating is also the pleasure of the eating itself, enjoying the pleasure of the eating with others. That's the total thing. If you're missing the food, you miss it. That's why it doesn't say it's a lot of art. Same thing if you have two people, that's why it's not taiva. One person sits down a big meal and doesn't learn, and eats basar taiva, and he drinks the yayin, and he gets drunk, and he's a zol of a sove, but he's not an ovid of a zor. He's a zol of a sove. It's a different category. It's a pasuk in Kohelis. The pasuk in Kohelis says, Kol advarim yegeim, lo yuchalish ledaber. What does it mean, kol advarim yegeim? What do you call advarim yegeim? What? People talk, they have conversations. The answer is that the reason that people speak is not because of expediency. See, people just talk because of the need to relate to other people. That's why even if they talk about business, if they talk about other areas, it seems, you would think, that they're really trying to converse, to have an exchange of ideas. Not really for an exchange of ideas. It's the opposite way. They really want to relate to the other person. And this is simply a means of relating. That's why it's called learning the game. It means they're frustrated because they don't find their mark. It's an attempt to relate, and it's a frustrating... And it's a game because it's the desire ultimately can't be satisfied in this situation, so it's frustrating. Yes? Now really, what did Yadis do about the problem? So Yadis really, in general, the first problem that Yadis did was, insofar as eating being a mice of taiva, being involved in the physical. So what Yadis did was, Yadis created a bracha, v'chalto v'savato v'rachta. That's really brichas hamazon. Brichas hamazon is what the purpose of brichas hamazon is, to raise a person to a higher level through his maisa achila. That his maisa achila should remind him of the fact that he gained sustenance, and ultimately his sustenance is from God. And as a matter of fact, in Birchas HaMazon, the Gemara says, if you don't mention two things, you're not Yetzer. What are the two things? Bris v'Torah. Bris v'Torah. How do you get to Bris v'Torah? What is Torah doing here? Torah, if you don't mention Talmud Torah, so then you're not Yetzer. In the second bracha, you have Torah. Now yeah, it's Midaraisa, man. So why? Because the whole purpose of Birchas HaMazon is to bring a person, to take a mundane act and to cause a person to reflect a little bit on this mundane act and to realize that his sustenance is from God, from the source of the universe, and ultimately the purpose of his sustenance is for what he is. And what is he really? Basically, what is he? He's a being whose highest activity is in studying Torah. And that's why if it doesn't reach the level, if he doesn't mention Talmud Torah and Berachas HaMazon, so there's no Berachas HaMazon. That's the purpose of Berachas HaMazon. But you see that in Berachas HaMazon, really, that's the philosophy behind it. It's not philosophy. That's really that's a halacha. It's a halacha, really. It's a halacha. Bris Oretz v'Torah, Eretz Yisrael also. Because Eretz Yisrael, what's the value of Eretz Yisrael? The value of Eretz Yisrael is that Eretz Yisrael is a halachic land. It's a halachic entity. It's a halachic reality. So So you ate food from the ground. It should reflect upon the ground, the earth, that really has halacha, has a whole system of halacha attached to it. That's Eretz Yisrael. So it raises the person to a higher level. That's the purpose of Berachas HaMazon. But you see that the Torah saw fit in Berachas HaMazon when it reached three, something new emerges. It's not the same Berachas HaMazon. It's a Berachas HaMazon of Zimun. Where does this come into the picture? Gadol Hashem Itim Ramah Shema Yachta. That's the pasuk. So what does it mean? It means to say Gadol Hashem Itim Ramah Shema Yachta means that's when you have the three people together. So then you have a psychological phenomena which is added to the eating phenomena, to the physical phenomena. So you must have a totally different framework for the bracha, for the relationship to God. So that what you say is that a person, when he does that, he recognizes that his emotions should not find satisfaction in the group of people that are with him, but rather the entire group has to recognize that they have to subordinate themselves, or they should know their true position in relation to the true source of security, which is God. It means he bows, he prostrates himself before God. That's really the idea of prostration. A person prostrates himself before God, it means that he recognizes that the human security is nothing. And the only security is God. So you see that the Torah saw fit in Birchas HaMazon, when it reached three, it becomes halachically a new type of benching. And it is that way. Because in a regular, and it's halacha too, because in a regular benching, if one person benches for somebody else, that would mean he's being motzi to the other person. But in Birchas Zimun, Rashi says that, in Shlosh Shachlo. In Shlosh Shachlo, in Birchas Zimun, it's not a halacha of Shomea Ka'ona. The way we chazal did it was that one person benched and the other two listened. So that means, it's not Shomea Ka'ona. It doesn't mean that the other person is yotze, like with Kiyas Shofar. If I make the bracha Shofar, so everybody in the shul is yotze with my bracha, because it's Shomea Ka'ona. Over here, it's not that way. Over here, it's one Birchas HaMazon for everybody. There's one spokesman for the group, but it's a new entity of Berachas HaMazon. It's one Berachas HaMazon for the entire group. That's what it is halachically. Why is there a new? It's a new entity of Berachas HaMazon. Why? Because it's a new psychological phenomenon. A new psychological phenomenon demands that a person should recognize a new philosophical reality. If he doesn't, so then he just remains with a psychological emotion, and he never rises above that. That's why you have the idea of Zimun. That's why Rashi says that a regilim b'nei adam lifter atzmon b'birkas hamazon. That's what he means. What Rashi means is that since the same idea exists, and that's really the whole philosophy behind, I hate to use the word philosophy, it's not an arbitrary philosophy, it really is, it's right behind halacha. So the real reason for the birkas hamazon is, why do you have Zimun? Because of a situation of three. So that's why people say that the Yotze with the idea of Zimun. Because the idea of Zimun is precisely to counteract the emotion of the group. And that's why you have Birchas HaZimun. That's a Russian name. Okay? Now let's take the last half of the Mishnah. Back to Avi's Gash. The last half of the Mishnah says that Aval Shlosha She'achwa Shulchan Echad V'amra Lav Divrei Torah. Last one. Aval shlosha she'achlo shulchan echad v'amar lav divrei Torah ki'ilu achlo mishulchanah shel matan. This is a very, very high level. How do you get to the level of ki'ilu achlo mishulchanah shel matan? Why don't you just say ki'ilu lo achlo mishulchanah? What's ki'ilu achlo mishulchanah shel matan? So Avi asked the question. He said that but they still get together. They still have the emotions of getting together. They have the need. The answer is that's the purpose of the whole Torah. The purpose of the entire Torah is not to prevent a person from experiencing human emotion. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to utilize the emotion. The person has to work with the Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'trinyan in the essay. God doesn't come out against his creatures and openly go against them. That's not the way of the Torah. To Rochel Adach Einoam. The pasuk in Chazal uses the pasuk as halacha too. It means that the way of the Torah is not to just go into God doesn't go into battle against people's nature. He makes allowances for their nature and he wants them to utilize their nature, but it should be used as a means, as a base for a higher experience. Because we do live in two worlds. We live in a world of psychological reality, and we live in the world of absolute reality. But we do not negate the world of psychological reality. But we use it, and we recognize its position. We're not overcome by it. We're not overawed by it. We experience it, but we recognize that there is something higher also. There's a part of man that's a malach. Man is a combination of a behemoth and a malach. And we recognize that the highest part of our nature, the divine part of our nature, is the part that recognizes the absolute reality. So we get together with people and we enjoy their company, but simultaneously in enjoying their company and in experiencing a psychologically satisfying state, we recognize this just as a basis for involving ourselves in the higher part of our nature, which is understanding the Chachmas Hashem, understanding the wisdom of God. And that's why the Gemara says three people got together and they ate, and there was Divrei Torah. It's as if they ate from the table of God. It wasn't the table of God. It means that God prepared this table. He gave them, what is the table for? The table is a means. God gave them the means. He gave them the food. He gave them the means. In order so that they should be able to enjoy themselves, satisfy themselves, to the degree where they're in a proper frame of mind, so they can use the higher part of their nature. And that's why it says, Kilu Achim Mishachon HaShamachim, because that's Shachon HaShamachim. That's the idea. As a Rabbi Mann mentioned, that there is a question in the Gemara, we don't pass in that way, but there's a man Dhamma that held in the Gemara, that two and two, you have an optional Zimah. Philosophically, it would work out also. Because it's not on the level where he has a total security, where basically he's on the way already. It is a step. It's a big step from being alone. So therefore, it would be a kiyum, but not the ultimate... Philosophically, you can understand why two should be there. We don't pass it out. Yeah, let me say something. We're talking about when you have Divrei Torah at a meal, it doesn't mean to say that the person just says Divrei Torah to the Yotzer. That's not really what it means. What it means is that the people are involved in Divrei Torah. And you will notice people who are involved in Divrei Torah, it's a different experience. It may be difficult for a person to go to it right away. It's difficult, but the person is not attracted to Divrei Torah at first. The Yetzer is the big attraction. But once he's involved in Torah, once he's involved in Chochmah, after the moment he's involved in Chochmah and he appreciates the ideas, suddenly the meal loses its entire value.
They won't go to the meal.
That's it. Exactly. They won't. That's true. They don't focus on it because there's nothing that draws a person like the enjoyment of the Chochmah of Torah. There's nothing that draws... A person's nature is constructed that way. The Ramban says, Ein simcha ka Torah sasvekas. There's no enjoyment that can compare to that. It may be difficult for a person to do it, but when a person experiences that enjoyment, it's the highest enjoyment, and everything else pales in front of him. So the whole food, everything, all becomes just a means, and he recognizes it as a means. That's when the person reaches the higher level. That's the experience. Yeah, what happens is the meal becomes very subordinated. It becomes nothing. He's involved in the experience of enjoyment. That's really the whole idea. This Mishnah really is the philosophy of Yadis in action. That's what it is. Really. Philosophy of Yadis in action. I would not say that. I would not say if a person discussed biology at the table that he was Yotzer Dischazal at all. I would say, you have to understand something. That's right. If the only person that could be Yotzei this, the enjoyment of knowledge is inextricably tied with God. And there's no, in Yadis, there's no such thing as, otherwise it's just a banal enjoyment. It's an entertainment like anything else. It has to be tied to God. So I would say that a person like the Rambam, who understood and who saw the relationship between the Chachma of science and it fit into the framework of God and the whole system of Chachma, that such a person absolutely. Yes. But just a person who discusses a mathematical point at a meal? No. It has to be tied into Chachma Sabukim. It has to be tied. And in order to tie it into Chachma Sabukim, in order to realize the connection and the relationship, a person has to be on a high level. A person has to be a metaphysician. So, therefore, not everybody can... The Rambam says that all the Chachmas are included in Torah. And we know, because I'll say it too. I would say yes, but not for everybody. depends on the person. The person has to be able to see how the Chachma ties into God. Because if the person doesn't see it, then it just remains an isolated fact like a game of chess. That wouldn't be, there's Chachma in chess too. But that's not the Chachma we're talking about. Chachma we're talking about is the Chachma that's related to the source of reality, which is God. And that's why it depends on the person. If the Rambam would discuss an idea in mathematics, that, yes, for him it would be Chachma Solokim and belongs in the Arach HaZaka, like the Rambam says, it's all calls there. Rambam, when he gives in the beginning in the Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, brings in facts from astronomy and all areas. He says, all this is part of the, I forget the Lashon, part of Shastra, say, or part of Gemara, or whatever, I forget the Lashon. Part of Torah, it's all part of Torah. Even matters of nutrition are part of Torah. So you have a whole paragraph on nutrition. Well, in the Arach HaZaka, you mean if I'm learning that, I'm not learning Torah? And what am I studying? I'm studying nutrition. So how can a person be studying nutrition and studying Torah? The answer is, if you see it as a part of the framework of the whole of reality, and it's a part of the framework of God's Chachma, if that's how you experience it, then it's true. Then it's part of Chachma Satorah. It's all part of Chachma Hashem. That's why for an average person, only if you really study Torah does he have that experience. He's just talking about science, he doesn't have that experience. Only a great philosopher can see it. You have to be on different levels. Because the Rambam in one place says how a person should divide up his day, so he says he should study 9 hours a day. And 3 hours a day does business. And the rest of it, that's what the Rambam says. 9 hours a day study, 3 hours a day business, and the rest of the day the Rambam is interrupted. But anyways, but the nine, he says, how does he break up to 8 hours sleep? 8 hours sleep, so at least in about 4 hours. Okay. So at any rate, the Rambam says that he has to be mashlish. He has to break up his day into one third chumash, one third Tanakh, Targum Tshuvim, one third Mishnah, and one third Gemara. That's what Ron. Then Ron says, as he progresses, he could limit the amount that he's involved in Chumash and Tanakh, and the amount that he's involved in Mishnah. As he gets to know those areas thoroughly, he doesn't have to keep going, he's just spending 3 hours a day in it. But the Ram doesn't mention anything else. It would seem that that's the complete formula for perfection. That's the perfect formula. That's the way God wants to divide up a day to study. But then the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Tshuva says that a person should set aside time to study science. In order that he should learn to be makir as bara, in order he should learn to be makir, to recognize God. So why does Ram mention that? He should give an hour a day for that, whatever. So. Start learning Torah, he's going to start. He's spending his time studying science, he's wasting his time in terms of perfection. That's only as a person develops and progresses naturally, and he sees, you see, he says, the Ram says that he should know that Leida is Boro. He should get to know God. In the world of science, he should get to know God. What does it mean he gets to know God? How does he get to know God from studying science? So you see, if you don't understand, by the fact that we don't understand the answer, it shows that we don't know what the Rambam is talking about. That's why it's not a fixed formula. It means that when a person reaches a certain level, he does understand how he's makir as bara from studying chokhmas elokim, from studying the chokhma of God in terms of knowledge of the universe. Knowledge of the universe does bring a person to recognition and a certain knowledge of God. But only a person who's on a certain level can understand what that means. The person who understands what that means sets aside time, has to make sure to set aside time to gain that experience. But the average person doesn't apply to it. It only applies to a person who is ready for that experience. That's what Ram has it in the last parak in Hilchos Tshuva, where he talks about Oved Me'ava. And Oved Me'ava is a very high level. There is such a phenomenon. But not everybody is Lav Kolagam Zerchalah. Not everybody can be Zerchalah to that level. Yeah. No, but I'm just saying it belongs in that parak, right? Because it's discussing something which is not available to everybody. You have to reach a certain level in order to understand what that means. There is such a phenomenon, but only a great chacham reaches. The problem with Yadis is that Yadis is very, very hidden. It's the opposite of what the world does. In the world, a person makes a scientific discovery, right away he runs to the press to try to show what a great discovery he made. To gain fame. Right. And to gain fame. And everything is, there's no problem. If you don't have to go search out the Chachamim and find out where they're hiding. Because they publish immediately. Which is natural, because the whole purpose in most cases is the fame. So that's why the knowledge of the world is open. In Torah you're dealing with a totally different system. It's a system where people who've reached a certain level start hiding. They have to hide their knowledge. What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says, Sifsei Kohen Yishmeru Das. The Torah of Akshon Mitir. They guard the knowledge. The lips of the Kohen Asiel. They guard the knowledge. And the person who has knowledge, the person who reaches the higher realms, can't discuss these things with other people. Because if he did, he would be ruining them. And since he's working in a system of perfection, he can't. So the knowledge remains with him alone. It's a secretive. And that's why people tend to disbelieve or to be skeptical about Yadis. Because they haven't seen really the greatness of Yadis, because it has never been exposed. It's a system where when you reach the higher realms, you don't go trying to show everybody the knowledge. So those people who reach the higher realms, they withdrew from society. It was Jew. And that's why it's an unknown. The only thing that Chazal did was, Chazal left certain hints, certain stepping stones that they mentioned in their words. And as if a person does move up into the higher spheres, he'll notice that he's moving along the guidelines that Chazal mentioned. Because those people that did have that experience, there were certain guidelines that they went through certain points. So all the Chazal mentioned really are like it's like they mention the stations on a train. They mention the name of the station. So a person who's on the train, you see, will see, oh, I'm on the right track, because that's the station, that's it, okay. You know. But they didn't do any more than that. So that whole experience of really uncovering Chachmas Hashem is something which is hidden in Yadis. And of course to this day it never was exposed. Yes. Even the basic system of Yad is not understood. People just think it's another religion, that's why they just shun it. They don't reckon it. It says, you see that Rashi? Rashi says, with Rashi. Miyad. He says when it becomes a Shulchan Aruch, it says, Miyad, immediately. Shemaskirin Shmo Shomakar. I'm sorry. Miyad, Kishadibre Divre Torah. He says, Nikra Shulchan Aruch Hashem. The table is immediately converted to a different entity. Mm-hmm. That's because the person is involved in the enjoyment of the Torah.
Yes. What about a Kilo?
And as soon as mitzvah, I would say that's not it's not considered Kilo when it's a mason, because the purpose is for mitzvah. So that's a different thing. This is talking about a social gathering. What's wrong about this? What's wrong? Why is this disgusting? Is because the person, it is so false. I'll give you an illustration of what. An illustration. Now, Albert Einstein was a very great great scientist, great person. And I think that I have a lot of respect for him because of his greatness and his perception of Chochmah, which was on a very high level. And before he died, he left an order before he died that his office should be used by the next person in line. And he said he couldn't tolerate the idea that they'd make a shrine out of his office. You see? And it's not just that he didn't want it. It was despicable to him. It was despicable. Why was it despicable? Because the worship of man is despicable. It's something which is so against, so false in terms of what a person's life and what a person really is. And if you understand what a person is, that it's despicable and to a person who knows what reality is. And he couldn't tolerate, it was like intolerable, the idea of making a shrine out of man is a despicable idea. If you can sense that emotion, you can understand what Chazal means when they say Zipchei Mason. The deification of man is despicable. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachina Yomer. Haneo balayla, Mishnah Bell. A person who's up at nighttime, v'amahalech baderech yitivi, a person who walks alone on the road, v'amafana libo levatova, harezem ischayev benafsho. So this person, it's as if he's committing suicide. A person who, three things, stays up at night, is awake at night, and he walks on the road alone, travels alone, and also he sets his mind to nonsense. Just doing nothing, nonsense, joking, entertainment. That's what it means. He's involved in entertainment. All right, it's Mishai Benafsha. It's as if he's killing himself. Now, let's leave the mission. There's two gersos in the mission. You take a look at Rabbeinu Yonah, you see obviously he had another gersa. Rabbeinu Yonah and Rashi seem to have had a different gersa in the mission. They had a gersa like this. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai Omer Haneor Balayla V'amafana Libo Levatola Reza Meschai Benafsho. They left out V'amahalach Badera Chachidi. That's what they left out. They omitted that. They said a person who's up at nighttime, and what does he do at nighttime? He gets involved in thinking nonsense. Daydreams. Okay? So he's daydreaming at nighttime. He's up at night and he's daydreaming. Think about different various nonsense that he wants, or he's whatever. He's involved in entertainment, whatever he might be involved in. So the Mishnah says that such a person is Mischayev Benafsho. Why is he Mischayev Benafsho? Why is he Mechayev? See, Rashi says, Hanei Abalaylo Mechashev Belibo Divrei Havoy. Divrei Havoy means nonsense. Well, anything you... whatever his emotions are attached to. Okay? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, why is that so? Rabbeinu Yonah says, Mitnei Shehem Sholos Ritzuyos. Because these are special, very special hours. Ein lo lechashev bohem ki im dvorim ritzuyim lefnei amacham. You should only think in those hours, in the middle of the night, you should only think about things that are that are before God, things that are appropriate before God. And what is that divrei Torah? Why it says she'os and shows kamahim chashivos? Because these hours are so precious. Uyos lemachshevas haTorah, and they fit really for the thought of Torah. Ki ein lo malacha lasos, he has no work to do. Veinenu shomei akolos bnei adam. He doesn't hear the voice of other people. Then yifna libo levatola mischayev benafsho, shemafsid zman. He loses time. Yisucha lios lo machshava berura nechona. He says a person can have an unbelievably clear thought. Umeisira also, mehira divrei Torah. And he's removing himself from that possibility. What is this halacha? And that's the halacha in the Rambam. Remember one time I went over this. Halacha in the Rambam? At nighttime. Why? Why is that so? Why is nighttime? Because at nighttime, what is the nighttime? Nighttime is a time where a person, yes, but it's more. You see, it's true, less likely to be disturbed. That's right. But it's also a psychological phenomenon. Nighttime is a psychological phenomenon. Okay? What do we say? Hagid baboker chasdecho v'munoscha balelos. V'munoscha balelos. Because nighttime, the night represents a fearful time. It's a fearful time. Why is night fearful? Because at nighttime a person's alone. Everybody's sleeping. And the fact, like the Rambam mentioned, the Rambam says that a person, even the fact that a person knows that another person exists, or that other people exist, makes him feel comfortable. A person would be totally alone in the world, we couldn't imagine what type of psychological state would be in. But even if you're lost in the woods and you're not in contact with civilization, just the fact that you know there's a civilization out there gives you tremendous comfort, even though you can't have any contact with it. And similarly, the fact that you know that other people are awake, they're in an awake state and you can communicate with them, that gives you a certain psychological security. There's a different feeling. But at nighttime, when everybody's asleep, you sense a certain aloneness. There's an emotion of being alone. And that aloneness, the Mishnah says, should be used for one purpose. It should be used for a person to remove himself from the psychological reality and to be involved in the absolute reality. Because it's a time when the psychological reality is not prevalent, does not prevail. That's nighttime. That's why the Rambam says that a person who is really involved in Torah will never lose a night. And he always will be involved in the, he'll spend his night in Chachma HaTorah, because that's when he can reach his deepest thought. Because that's when he's the most removed, like the Ben Yonah says, Eino Shemea Kolos Ben Erem. The person who doesn't do that is Mishayev Benafsho. Why is he Mishayev Benafsho? Because that's really the whole purpose. Mishayev Benafsho means when a person does something where he forfeits the very purpose of his whole existence. And the purpose of his whole existence is to be in that state of absolute reality. And here he has the perfect situation which God created for him. He has the nighttime where he can step right into that experience, and instead what does he do? He involves himself in his fantasies. He involves himself in the thought of the divrei avoid, the thought of the satisfaction of his fantasies. So that, a person, when a person does that, he simply removes himself, he's forfeiting his entire purpose of reaching any objective reality. And that's why he's Mishayev Benafsho. That's our Ben Yonah said. That's John Ben Yonah. So really, this next Mishnah Dalet is a continuation of the, they tie in together. Continuation of the previous Mishnah. But it's two applications. One application is in a social situation, and the other application is when a person is alone at night. Okay. I just want to add 2 points to last week's year. The only time that we consider something avodah zarah is when the emotion reaches its fulfillment, reaches a form of fulfillment. Emotion never really reaches total satisfaction, but it reaches a form of fulfillment where a person can't remove himself from it. That's really what avodah zarah is. And that's why this situation is singled out, because the social situation is one in which the emotion finds a tremendous level of fulfillment. And once the emotion finds that level of fulfillment, then already it cannot remove itself. You see, it doesn't remove itself anymore. As long as it's in a state of frustration, it's okay. That's why one person or two people, it doesn't reach that fulfillment. In a totally social setting, then it does reach its fulfillment. That's one point. Another point I want to mention is that, of course, this phenomena, the highest level of the phenomena, in terms of perfection, is for a person totally to remove himself from these type of emotions. Emotions that are associated with a person's early the attachments that he has to his early life, and that's really the beginning of last week's parsha. Lech lecha me'artzecha mimolatetecha mebeis avecha. And that's why Chazal say, "Liken schar al kol dibur v'dibur." Why did God enumerate each one to give him schar on each dibur? Means each one represents a different emotion. Atzcha, your land, the person has an attachment to his land, the place that he lives. In fact, the Gemara says that there's shalosh chinos saying. There are three types of, there are three psychological situations where a person likes something, yes, for no reason at all, just likes it. One of them is chayn makom al yoshva. People like their place. You'll notice, people, they live in certain areas, it could be the most remote areas. Ashkash, but they're very, very proud. This is my place, my land. It's a type of psychological emotion, an attachment. The Malada Tafa, place where a person is born, has a special importance. It's tied to a person's narcissistic nature. In fact, he was born there. It's his place. It's the place of his origin. And Beis Avicha is the attachment that a person has, the emotional attachment that a person has to the house of his father. It's an emotional attachment. And the highest level is where a person removes all those emotions and relates those emotions to God. That was the Tzivut of Avraham Avinu. Everybody can't do that. It's the Tzivut of Avraham Avinu. Okay. Now, the next member, the member that we were involved in last, was Haneir Balaylo, Vamahalach Yechidi Baderach, Vamafan Ali Balavatala. So, one gist is that a person is up at night, and they waste their time. Alright. So we explain that gersa. I mean, because nighttime is a time when a person is alone, and being alone is an opportunity for a person to experience the objective reality. But there's another gersa. The other gersa breaks it up into three. Neor balayla, person's up at nighttime. Mahalach baderech yechidi, person walks alone on the road, travels alone. And also the third thing is Mefana Libel of Atola, which means that he He wastes his time. He wastes his time with nonsense. Okay? The final leave of a Levatola essentially means the person is given over to either thinking about his fantasies or acting them out. One of the two. What are these three things? If the gear says three things, so what are these three? What do these three things represent? Okay? Yeah, Mishraev Benashem means it's as if he's forfeiting his life. He's forfeiting his life. Mishraev Benashem. I'll tell you what I think of this. In life, people have a difficulty. The difficulties people have is because they can't relate themselves to reality. Can't relate themselves to reality. Reality is something which remains non-existent in their framework. And insofar as a person is removed from reality, and to them it is not real, that is how far and how great their imperfection is. Now what the Mishnah says is that there are three types of negation of reality which are detrimental to a person, and which are tantamount to a person forfeiting his life. The first one is Haneir Balayla. Haneir Balayla means, doesn't mean he's up in that line of dark. Haneir Balayla means the person stays up at night, and the nighttime, really, the Chazal say that the nighttime was created for one of two things, either Shena, sleeping, or Talmud Torah. So, of course, the Mishnah talking about a person, Talmud Chacham is on the contrary. That's what the night really was created for. But it means that the night was created on a practical level for an average person, so he could sleep. He could sleep, he could rejuvenate himself, he could regain his energies. So, because nighttime is a time of withdrawal. So he withdraws and he sleeps. So, Ne'er Balayla means the person is up at night, and even though he has to face the next day, he's not going to be able to face the next day properly because he simply didn't sleep. He's Ne'er Balayla, plain and partial. It means a man is up at nighttime and wastes his night because the next day rolls around where he has to be able to perform properly and be active, and he can't. He's sleepy. He's tired. Now the person who's near Balayla is a certain psychological phenomenon that takes place. When he's near Balayla at nighttime, the reality of his obligations and his responsibilities during the daytime do not seem real to him. So he wastes the time. The hours go by. I should go sleep later because I have a big day tomorrow. I'm sleeping. Yeah, waste another hour. See, what happens is the reality of tomorrow at that moment is not really fully being experienced. Okay? He can negate the reality. So Ne'er Balayla means a person, it's an example. The example is a person who negates in his mind, mentally, can negate his concept of responsibility. In other words, his responsibility that he has to, that he must execute, to him is not a reality. There are people like that. It happens. That a person can negate the concept of his own responsibility. It seems like that time will never occur. Tomorrow is not real. Now I'm having fun. Tomorrow is not real. So that's one type of a person. That's Mishayev Benasha. A person who's under the sway of that emotion is Mishayev Benasha. He's forfeiting his life. He's forfeiting his life simply. He could never be successful. It's impossible. He's not in reality.
Yes. What about a lot of times people, they in their sleep.
See, sleep is an escape, but sleep is a legitimate escape. Because he sleeps, he rests. The next day, he's fresh. A person can't expect a person to just face reality 24 hours a day. He has to sleep. But a person who doesn't sleep is even further away. It means that to him, the next day, the obligations and responsibilities of the next day are not real. It means that this person has the ability to avoid reality with regard to responsibility. That person is Mishayev. A person who has that tendency is Mishayev Benasha. That's Mishayev Benasha. That's one type of escape of reality. That's Mishayev Benasha. Yes?
Well,
He's escaped from reality where a person, anyone, Ney or Belilah, represents an escape from reality where the person will eventually be very sorry that he's made this move. There escapes, there are controlled escapes from reality. Nothing wrong with that. Controlled escapes from reality. But where a person escapes from reality to the point where it's not controlled. It's not under the framework of the intellect. It's just an action which results from the emotions overpowering him. That's Messiah ben Asher. Can negate reality insofar as the future is concerned. Of course, the Mishnah gives the most grotesque example, which is the example of Ne'er Belilah. Tomorrow is just right ahead. But people can have this emotion with regard to a year from now, months from now, a year, 2 years. It's not a reality. It's not a reality. That reality is not going to roll around. I don't have to worry about what's going to happen in that time. I don't have to worry about my responsibilities in that time. Because it's not real. It's so far away. That's the same as Messiah ben Asher. The same, that emotion is Messiah ben Asher. The escape of responsibility in the future. That's Messiah ben Asher. At the Chacham, the Rambam says, the Klolos and the Brachas. The Brachas is that a person plans properly. The Rambam says, first he gets a profession, then he buys a house, and then he gets married. He means to say that he follows a rational order. Follows a rational order. But the Tipshim is just the opposite. First he gets married. Then next thing he does is buys a house. And then the second thing is, the Sof Yomov, towards the end of his life, he'll look around for a job. That's what the Rambam says. So that's the same concept. It means that the person has the ability to negate reality. That's Messiah ben Asher.
Yeah.
Means he's using nighttime for his entertainment rather than sleep. Never think about that. Okay. What is Mahalef Baderech? What does that represent? Mahalef Baderech. What? Mahalef Baderech Echidi is another instance where a person denies reality. And that is with regard to his own life. Somehow or other, he's going to escape death. Not dangerous. It's not going to happen to me. Okay? That's another emotional phenomenon. Mahalech Echidi Bederech is in those days was very dangerous. Traveling on the road was very dangerous in those days. Because there were wild animals, but more than wild animals, even people, because the highwaymen. Because since people used to travel alone, it wasn't like today. We have a highway system. Going on the road meant you're leaving society. There's nobody out there. There's no police. There's no way to safeguard the situation. So people were traveling, and that's why you have to go for Derech. Because it wasn't Mokum Sakana almost. It was Sakana on the road. There was no highways. The person on the road, he's alone in the woods. The robbers would wait for them, and they would rob him, and maybe even kill him. So that's why... That's right. That's right. The Rambam says the person, when they came back from the road, they were so nervous that the Rambam says the person in that state is parked in the field for 3 days. So you see, it was an ordeal. Traveling on the road was an ordeal. That's why the Rav holds that you don't make it through Sederach, you need to take a plane. Because he says it's not the situation anymore, it's a car. The person really gets nervous in the plane. It's more safety than traveling in a car. So Ramesh disagrees. Ramesh holds it's the situation. But the Rav holds that the situation means in terms of danger. It's not. What? That's right. There are modern versions of the old situation. So, Mahalei Chichidi Baderech means the person, it was dangerous to go alone. Mahalei Chichidi Baderech means the person says to himself, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. That's the second instance of an emotion that a person has with regard to a denial of reality. Denies reality insofar as his own capability of being destroyed. Person that has that emotion, Neschayev Ben Asher, negation of reality. It's an emotion that a lot of people, even great people, could have that emotion. It's true. I think you're right. Especially great people. All right, that goes on with what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that great people are vulnerable to different types of imperfection than the average person. Like the Rambam mentions egomania. The person is a famous doctor is more subject to egomania than a regular person. Because he sees everybody respects him, whatever he says, everybody jumps, and the honor he gets. starts believing it. It's dangerous. So a person that's a great person is subject to even more to imperfection. And this is a situation that's true. I agree with you on it. This is a situation which is the same type of thing, because a person who is a great person has a feeling somewhere or other that he's superior to everybody else, and he's sort of traveling on a separate wavelength. Nothing's going to stop him. And that's the emotion. That's the Malach HaKibah. The last one is Hamafane Libo Levatola. Another expression of a denial of reality. Hamafane Libo Levatola. What emotional state is that? Great. Very good. Exactly. The third one is the denial of the passage of time. That's the third one. Where a person, the final legal of our Torah means he wastes his time. Why does a person waste his time? It's not because he doesn't want to learn. He wants to learn very much. But there's plenty of time to learn. That's the idea that he has. To him, time is not a reality. The passage of time is not a reality. That's the third Messiah of Benafsha. Third Messiah of Benafsha is where a person postpones his limud, the Seder HaLimud. Postpones the same Seder HaLimud because he's young, many years ahead of him, and the reality of the passage of time to him, as far as he's concerned, is non-existent. Such an individual is Messiah. That emotion is Messiah Benafsha. So the Mishnah, according to this gear, so the Mishnah is enumerating three situations where the denial of reality is causing the person, tantamount to a person forfeiting his life. Those three emotions. It's not true. You see, you have to be able to know what the emotion of Chazal is talking about is. In other words, Chazal is talking about that emotional state where a person simply feels, I'll learn in the future. Plenty of time, 20 years ahead of me. That denial of reality is the... That's why it's three areas, really. The expression takes place in three areas. Some people have it in one area and not in another area. There are people that don't have a situation, don't deny the reality insofar as their responsibility is concerned in the future. Nevertheless, with regard to their lives, they feel invulnerable. And there are people who have the who could feel that they're not invulnerable, but with regard to time, there feels plenty of time.
You don't think that
that's the Chazal pointed out three expressions of the denial of reality, which result in a person forfeiting his life. Messiah Benafsho. Each one of these. One is a spiritual Messiah Benafsho. The other two are physical Messiah Benafsho. One is insofar as the quality of a person's life. That's the first one. The quality of the person's life. The second one is with regard to his life itself. And the third is physical life itself. And the third one is with regard to his the life of his soul. That's the other one. Mishnah, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akona Omer. Kol HaMakabel Alav Ol Torah. Anyone who accepts upon himself the yoke of Torah, ma'avirim mimenu, ol malchus v'ol derech eretz. So they remove from him the yoke of the government and the yoke of everyday life. V'chol aporek mimenu ol Torah, anyone who removes from himself the yoke of Torah, mosnin olav. They give him, ol malchus, the burden of the government, v'ol derech eretz. And the burden of personal life. Okay. Ol derech eretz, ol malchus, the Rambam says, is torech hamelech v'chayelosav. It means taxes, it means whether it's physical, whether you have to go to the army, or whether they tax him financially, whatever it is. Ol derech eretz is torech hazman. Torech hazman is the troubles of everyday living. Oma. So the Rambam says, Amar, he says, Ki bischa lokho ol ta Torah, because the man accepted upon himself the yoke of Torah, Yatzileo Hashem Yisbarach, God will save him, the yekel me'olav Torah hazman, and he removed from him all the burdens of daily life. It's like the Gemara says, there's a Gemara like Chazal like that. Chazal say, V'yosafta de ganecha. So the Gemara says that is the time when the Jews don't do Ritzon HaShem Makom. But if they do Ritzon HaShem Makom, Malachtam Nasis HaYadei Acherem. When the Jews live in accordance with God's will, so their work is done by others. Other people do their work. That's what it means of it. It says that if the schar loko, old Torah, because a person accepts the yoke of Torah, so the Torah chazman is removed from it. Of course, it doesn't mean that a person can say to himself, I'll go sit in line and let somebody else support me. No, that's not allowed to do that. But it means that God removes from him the burden. Okay. Now, then you have to achar she'osa torasso ikar in malachto aroi, since the man makes the main part of his life Torah, and his work he makes secondary. Aroi means he doesn't really involve himself in work in the mainly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu yishmereyu mikol davara. God will save him from every bad thing. Shelo yitzarech libato migmilim haTorah. That he will not have to stop learning Torah. V'lo yitein b'lev ha'oretz ha'lokeach nefashas lasos melachta l'kachas hazeh v'yinotzel memelachas ha'aritzen l'hakim ratzon ha'lasach. He says in those, they used to have like a labor tax. Those who are in charge of the labor tax, God will make sure that they won't choose him. That they won't choose him. We'll escape from that. They'll forget about it. Okay?
How do you...
V'ol derech eretz, that's ol malchus. An oretz means a person in high command. V'ol derech eretz, lo yitzarech lasos malacha harbe, l'tzorach panasasa. He will not have to do a lot of work in order to support himself. Ubimat yaspik l'kadei chayosa. And with a little bit of work, he'll be able to find a situation where he'll be able to support himself. Ki meleches ha-tzadik nisbareches. He says, because the work of the tzadik is blessed. V'nafsho smecho b'chelka. And his soul is very happy in what he has. Okay? V'chol ha-parek mimenu ol Torah, a person who removes himself the yoke of Torah, nosnin lo ol malchus. Shehu choshev lasos malachto harbei, v'yaniach malachas ha-Torah. V'Hashem yisbarach yofra machshavto, v'yitim b'lev ha-melech l'kachto, lasos malachala. So he says that then a person who removes himself from the burden of Torah, so God will make sure that he intends to do a lot of work and he wants to be involved in his own work. So suddenly he'll find out that he's summoned by the king to go do work for the king, and he has to waste his time. V'ol derech eretz, he says, Shehu no day the Torah acha mechiyasa v'la yuchal emata. Ol derech eretz really means, essentially, the burden of parnasa. Gam ki yimtza ena lo yismach b'chelta. He says, and even when he finds it, he'll never be satisfied. V'chol yom av lehevel yaga. And all his life he worked for nothing. Lahashir, to become wealthy, lahosif osher al osher. And to keep adding more and more. Ki yishenema oev kesef lo yizba kesef. A man who loves money will never be satisfied by money. All his days are spent in work and in attempting to accrue a lot of money. And he will never ever have peace. That's the Rabbeinu Yad. Okay. So, what do you say about this Chazal? What's interesting about the way the Mefarshim learn this Chazal, it seems to be straddling to different areas. If you look at the Chazal, does anybody notice the point? There are two different areas. One area, especially the Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rambam only mentions about God, but the Rabbeinu Yonah elaborates more. He speaks about, and he speaks in terms of human perfection. You see, in other words, which means that the person who makes the essence of his life Torah. Person who makes the essence of his life is the enjoyment of Torah. So what happens is that he enjoys to a much greater degree. He's very happy with the physical that he has. He can enjoy the physical that he has to a greater degree than a person who has more of the physical. Because the mistake that people make with regard to the materialistic life is that it's not the material that you have, but it's how much enjoyment you derive from it. That's the mistake that I think most people make. Most people assume that if I have more material goods, so therefore I have a better life. It's not if you have more material goods you have a better life. You have a greater enjoyment of the material goods you have a better life. And having more material goods doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to enjoy those material goods to a greater degree. It's a well-known fact that a person who is a person who is living on a lower economical level, if you raise him slightly, he will receive a tremendous enjoyment. A man is driving an old car, if you get him a new car, any kind of a new car, he could have more enjoyment out of that new car than a man who trades in his Continental or his Cadillac. I mean, it's a psychological phenomenon. So the question in the materialistic life, in the materialistic life itself, is not the material, but how much enjoyment the person is getting out of it. Because what difference does it make if a person has the most fantastic materialistic object if he doesn't gain any enjoyment out of it? And enjoyment is not dependent upon the object. But it's dependent upon the person that is using the object. That's what Chazal said. That's what it means. So it means that the tzaddik, even though physically he may have less, but he enjoys more what he has than the person who is not a tzaddik. That's the statement. So insofar as that's concerned, insofar as that's concerned, he has a better life. That's true. But what does this have to do with the idea that God will help him out? How do these two ideas work out? Basically, what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that a person called a makabel lov ol Torah, it means that a person who has a life where essentially he enjoys the ideas. That's the main life. The makabel lov ol Torah means his essential, the essence of his life is chachmas haTorah. So a person who has that kind of a life, so ma'avirim me'olav ol derech eretz. What does it mean, ol derech eretz? Ol derech eretz means that forget about the fact that God makes it easy for him. But it means simply that since he's living such a life where he's totally involved in chokhmah, so he sees life differently, so therefore he can work less insofar as the materialistic is concerned, and he can enjoy it more. So that's what it means. Nothing in the matter of all derech eretz. All derech eretz means that these other people are involved in their way of life. They're involved in the burdens of derech eretz, in the tremendous burdens of making a living. Why do they have so many burdens? The burdens of are essentially because of their imperfection. But if a person perfects himself, so then on the contrary, he's not burdened with it. It's a part of his life which he takes care of, but it's not something which he senses, in which he senses the tremendous burden of accomplishment, of doing something, because that's not his area. It's not his area. In other words, the man is not in the world of the fantasies. Most of the reason that people feel burdened, insofar as the Parnassah is concerned, is because they're involved, especially with Manazeh, is because they're involved in the fantasies, not in necessities, but they're involved in the fantasies. So this becomes a whole all. This becomes a whole burden. That's what the Ram says. V'hein elokim asas adam yashar, v'hein bikshu chesbonos harbeh. What is the cheshbonos harbeh? Cheshbonos harbeh means a lot of complications. Complications means his whole life becomes complicated. He has to do this, he has to do that, he has to get this, get that. All these different things that burden his mind. So a person is involved in Torah, these burdens are gone. They don't exist then. All he looks at is in terms of, in the frame of reference of what he needs. If he has what he needs, he's happy, and that's it. That's not his area of involvement. So this whole this burden that a person carries with him in life that he has to accomplish does not express itself at all with regard to the materialist. That's really what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. Essentially, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is a psychological phenomenon, which means to say that a person cannot escape, because it says a person who removes the old Torah, what happens? They place upon him the old of Derech Eretz. What does it mean? It means to say that a person cannot live without some type of an old. Which means to say a person cannot live without feeling a certain type of accomplishment, a sense of accomplishment associated to his life. Because you could say, let's say a person removes the old Torah, so he'll be a free man, totally. He doesn't have the old Torah, he doesn't have the old Panasa, he doesn't care about the physical, he doesn't care about the learning. So he'll be a totally free man. Such a phenomenon does not exist. It's an impossibility. It's impossible. No, I'm sure. What Chazal is saying is that a person must have an area, that expression must take place. It's going to take place somewhere or other. If the only way to escape it is if the man is involved in chokhmah. Kachna, the whole thing seems nonsensical, and it's just gone. And then that's why Chachma is the only area where a person can live to be free. Because when a person is a Chacham, he comes to certain recognition that he realizes that the nonsense of all these burdens. But a person who doesn't have, who isn't involved in Chachma, he naturally will have to have some type of burden, some type of accomplishment that he has to sense. That accomplishment is the burden. Whatever the accomplishment might be, that's called Ol Derech Eretz. Whatever the accomplishment is, he has a nice house, he has a nice car, whatever it might, whichever form it might take, is a prominent person, there are different forms that it takes, many different forms. But the point is, whatever form it takes, it is a yoke, which means it's something that he's striving to reach, and since he's striving to reach it, he has to be, by definition, unhappy that he doesn't have it. So this is the Ol Derech Eretz. And that's what the Rabbi Yonah says, that the result is he spends his whole life in this pursuit, the pursuit of nothing. That's eventually means nothing. It's something that's imagination. It's in his imagination. Why can't he stop? To stop is impossible. It's humanly impossible to stop. There's only one alternative, and that alternative is Torah. That's the only alternative. That's really what the Chazal is saying. That's the Ol Derech Eretz, and that's what Rabbi Yonah says. That's the idea of that he's satisfied and everything else Rabbeinu Yonah knows. Of course, that's not the Ol Malchus. That's not the Ol Malchus. Ol Malchus is something else. Ol Malchus means that a person has extraneous. What does Ol Malchus mean? It means extraneous burdens. Suddenly, the government demands that you a labor tax. You have to go work for the government. Jury duty. He has to go. So that's Ol Malchus. Ol Malchus, a person, it would seem, cannot control. But the truth of the matter is that that's not so. Even Ol Malchus is under his control. Why? Because, as we said before, with regard to the materialistic world, it's not what the person has, but it's how he relates to what he has. Now, a person, and that's why Rabbeinu Yonah gives a very nice mashal. He says like this, by the Ol Malchus. If you look carefully, he says like this. He says, Ol Malchus. Yes. V'chol apartment of Ol Torah, nosnin olav Ol Malchus. Shehu choshev lasos melachto harbe. He imagines that he's going to do all of his work. And then God, here he mentions God. And then suddenly God puts in the mind of the whoever is in charge that he should single him out for work. Okay. That's insofar as these, we didn't go into that, insofar as God is concerned. But insofar as the regular person is concerned, it's also true. Forget about it, just naturally. Why? Because a person who's in the frame of mind where he has this burden that he must accomplish, he must produce, now this person is always in a state where he simply can't afford any time. I mean, he can't afford any, as things are, it's impossible. Now, for a person to be burdened with an extraneous burden besides, that's intolerable. Ol Malchus means an extraneous burden. That's what Ol Malchus is. What is Ol Malchus? It's extraneous to the scheme of his life. A person like this, when something extraneous comes along, is completely shattered, because here he's behind schedule as it is. By definition, he's behind schedule. He'll never be up to schedule. Now, all of a sudden, something else comes into the picture and adds an additional burden, and he has to different additional responsibility. It's intolerable. He can't take it. So the point is, emotionally, Ol Malchus he can't relate to. Emotionally, he can't relate to Ol Malchus. Whereas a person who's perfected, Ol Malchus is simply part of reality. It's true. He feels bad. I mean, he can't involve himself in learning at that time because he has the Ol Malchus. But he's a lover of Chachman, and this is God's universe, and this is the order of things. So he gives whatever he has to the Melech. It's a different mental state. What I want to point out is that Ol Malchus, also there's a difference. It depends how a person, Ol Malchus means suddenly, Ol Malchus doesn't have to mean really the Melech. Everybody experiences Ol Malchus. Suddenly things are going along difficult enough as it is, and all of a sudden a new thing happens, something else happens. That's Ol Malchus. Now how does a person relate to that situation? The imperfected person goes crazy, can't tolerate it. Whereas the perfected person recognizes there's nothing that he was involved in that was so busy about that he had to accomplish.
is involved in enjoying himself. Chachmasal Torah is wonderful. All right, you can't do it all the time. This is the way life is. This is, he recognizes this is the scheme of reality. God is the source of reality. This is the scheme. So he can't do it. He feels bad. He can't do it. But it's a totally different framework. That's the mission of Olam Malchus. It's a different mentality. That's the way it works insofar as naturally the person is concerned. That's why the person, the Rambam really in the Moreh Nevuchim, I think tries to get a lot to this point. That the difficulties in life really depend upon the person. It's how the person views life. The way if a person has a proper attitude of life will be very happy in life. Rambam in the Moreh that I mentioned. And that's because if his emotions are in the right area, he takes everything. One of the things that Rambam mentions is that he takes everything in stride. That's the characteristic of the perfected person. To be able to take things in stride. That's the characteristic. And that's because his emotions are not involved in this endless pursuit. He's not in hot pursuit after something. A person who's in hot pursuit after something can't stop now. Now another burden is...